Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new podcast. I'm your host, Marcos, with my fellow co-host, as always, Justin.
Hello, everybody. Before we start, I have a little treat for real this time. Okay, ready? Ready? Amazing
Grace. It's fucking got Elvis in here, dude.
One more time. Okay, hold up. My bad. Amazing Grace. Come on, man.
This is like how when Austin Butler auditioned, bro.
All right, my bad, guys. You guys are probably annoyed at me at this point. I'm in my singing
era. I'm just
era.
Surprised how the caffeine hasn't came down yet.
Dude.
It's hey, not man. Going to.
It's not going to. It's for the rest of the night.
Hey, man. Come on. Have I gone down since you've seen me
today? I don't think you've gone down since I met you.
Oh, there we go. Hey. Oh, my God. That's hey, the buddy. Ultimate compliment
I'm
right there.
This guy 8-plus years. There's plenty of more of that came from.
Oh my God, dude, that's so funny. Well, quick life update again. So this is Julie Cornejo's episode. She was freaking great. And I'm currently looking for a therapist. So if you're a therapist and you want to slide in my DMs professionally, okay? Please. Professionally. So if you want to send me an email, let me say that properly. You could probably either DM me on Instagram and I'll give you my email and then we could talk. But yeah, I'm looking for a therapist. You know, it's probably just like a stigma that you need therapy because I'm not crazy. There's a lot of people that go to therapy aren't crazy. I think all of us are crazy anyways. So, yeah, I mean, dude, honestly, after this conversation, I was like, I'm going to therapy. I don't care what's going to be in front of me. I'm taking action to get therapy. Yeah, that's cool. The life update. And yeah.
I mean, if you can tell now, guys, this episode is about therapy.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything related to the human mind and why we do what we do and pretty much our quarter life crisis is that we're going
yeah,
through.
Yeah, definitely. And she actually she specializes in a certain field in therapy, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So she's a student therapist?
Correct, yeah.
Right. So she talks about how that works and what are the things that she, I don't want to say deal with, but the stuff that she works with in that field of psychology, which was very, very fascinating. I was very engaged and I learned a lot of things I didn't freaking know today.
It's super insightful. Yeah. And honestly, I hope some parents even listen to this episode so they know where to get the resources or they know how to go about, you know, the things that they're going through with their other children, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And just anyone honestly listen to this because it's really insightful and I love the conversation that we had with her.
Yeah.
It was definitely one of my favorites to date, I would say. Yeah.
Definitely. And definitely, too, one thing, when this episode drops, it's 1 week before the new year, before 2023. So that means we're only about 5 days before 2023 when this episode drops. So, right? I don't know. Honestly, don't count me on my fast math. I suck at it. It's about to be 2023, and we're really excited for what we have planned for the podcast. Don't leave us now. We have new ideas that we hope to bring to you guys in 2023. Yeah. Our main man, Tony, over here. We got something brewing. Are they ready for it?
I don't know. I hope so.
I hope they're ready for it.
I hope they're ready. They should. They're going to be ready when it comes.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. It's going to be. I don't want to spill anything yet, so we're ready to spill it. But it's going to be a lot of freaking fun. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We're rolling, baby. We're rolling. Okay. One more time. Amazing grace as we listen. Come on. Come on. Join me. Ready? 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 Tony, you want to join me? Okay. One, two, three.
Amazing grace. How sweet the sound.
That was good. Oh my gosh. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed.
Hopefully you guys didn't log out of Spotify. Please, trust me, the episode's good.
The episode's good. There's no Amazing Grace singing in the episode.
If you don't know by now, the intros are crazy. Yeah. So here we are.
All right, guys. I hope you guys enjoy Julie Cornejo.
Welcome to the new podcast.
There you go. By the way, somebody's in the lobby.
Oh, there you go, mate. Hello. There you go.
Yeah, yeah, she's in there.
Oh, get her here.
Hey.
Yo.
Is my volume okay?
Damn, yes. You sound good as fuck.
Hello. Nice to meet you, by the way. I'm Justin.
Julie.
Nice to meet you, Julie. Hold
nice
on.
Nice to meet you.
My headphones are so loud.
No, I got you. I
okay.
Got
you. It might adjusting be my us. Voice.
No, no you're perfect. You're good. You're good. But yeah, nice to meet you. Thank you for doing this.
Of course. This awesome. Anything for little Marquitos.
Little Marquitos. You know my contact name for him is Marquitos. Yeah,
it's his new birth name.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Marquitos. So wait, so how do you guys know each other again?
So I guess him and my boyfriend are also really good friends, but okay. Mainly I know him through, I guess, our other mutual friend Hector, who he's known for like a zillion years.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I always hear about Hector. I've only met him like one time in my whole entire life. I've known this guy. So. Yeah,
and he'll make an impression in that one.
Shout out to Hector.
Shout out to Hector. So I have like a very crazy fascination for psychology and psychologists. That's like my number. Even though I'm not anywhere near that industry, I just love reading books about it. I love listening to podcasts about it. It's so fascinating. It's insane. So how'd you get into it? Like, what made you go into psychology?
It's a really specific type of psychology that I do, which is school psychology. Uh-huh. So it's purely with students. I'm not in any way like certificated to work with anyone really over the age of 24, which is the cutoff.
No.
But it mainly started because I was interested in education. And I had a bachelor's in psychology because it was kind of the most open degree I could get. Because when you're 18, when you're 18, you don't know what you're signing up for in college. So I was like, let me try something super broad. So if I ever want to like change my mind, I can figure it out.
Yeah.
And then one day I was Googling like, how can I work in schools? Because I wanted summers off. And I found out about school psychology, which is a very unique approach to psychology where there is counseling involved. But I actually also do like IQ testing and cognitive testing and stuff like that. So it's a really interesting field.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Wait, okay. Mm-hmm. So cognitive testing, what kind of cognitive tests do you perform to the students?
So the district I'm in right now, it's a really large district in LA. Mm-hmm. Probably the one you're thinking of, but I won't say it. They do what's called alternative testing. So it's not a standard IQ test because historically those were biased against people of color, particularly African Americans.
Wow.
Because there's a lot of culture rooted in it. Parts of these tests would be like, what do you use a teapot for? If you've grown up and you don't know what a teapot is, you're going to flunk that question. And then your IQ is going to go down all because, you know, your mom called it something else or you used to use a pot on the stove. Right. So they were really biased. So what IQ testing is now, it's kind of like a series of different things. There's memory tests, and then it breaks it down even further. There's verbal memory. If I were to tell you something, and then in 5 minutes I was saying, say the same sentence I said 5 minutes ago, would you be able to do it? And so obviously, like, my memory is shot. I sometimes can't even remember my own last name. So in that area, I might score lower than a student with a higher memory, a verbal memory score.
Right.
So it's really interesting. And then throughout all these things, you get what's called like a combined score. And you ultimately, which is kind of a tricky thing, put these students into categories. If their IQ or their cognitive ability is within an average lane, below average, above average. And from there, I can recommend special education services.
Wow. Interesting.
Wow. Okay, quick question. So,
yeah.
You know how there is a test where you said that if you say a sentence and then you ask the person to repeat again 5 minutes later, that doesn't determine IQ, right? That's just your ability to memorize things or remember things, right?
It's part of your cognitive ability. Your cognitive ability, the way I explain it to students or to parents who are going through this for the first time, I say it's your ability to apply information at your level. Mm-hmm. So I would never use, you know, a 12th grade test on a sixth grader because that's not approaching them at their level. But what I would use is a sixth grade test. So I would use words that they're familiar with or games that they're capable of doing physically, mentally, stuff like that. And then I test their verbal memory. I test their auditory memory, their kind of like visual memory. I'll also test the way that they can, like, motor ability is part of your IQ. Are you able to trace lines and stuff like that? Some of it's pretty simple, but some of it gets a lot more complex. And all of those things come together and build up your IQ. Wow. So you may have what's called a specific learning disability, where your visual IQ might be off the charts. Your verbal IQ might be off the charts, but maybe where your motor skills are might be a little impacted. So then I would recommend special education, and maybe we'll assign you a note taker, because obviously writing might be hard for you, or math might be impacted by that, because math is a lot of writing, obviously essays and stuff. So I'd ask for you to have shorter essays or more time to write an essay and stuff like that. So it's kind of moving the bar around so that way everybody's at an equal playing field. Right. But yeah, like, memory itself is an IQ, but it contributes to your cognitive ability.
Got it. Damn, that is so fascinating. Oh my gosh. Oh, so, okay, so I'm trying to put together what I just recently heard about kids and their specific needs, and how sometimes in certain schools, certain kids have certain ways of learning, and it depends on the resources they do end up getting. So, it's the book by Malcolm Gladwell. It's called The Outliers. So, in hockey, they have a certain age limit cutoff. So, based on that, that would be your team, or that would get you onto the travel team. That would get you more resources to be able to succeed at the sport you're at. So, in schools, how I saw it, like how I related it, is that when you're in a certain social economic background, if you're in a certain family that has more resources, the more you'll be able to succeed. And if you're in a lower income family, you don't have those resources as the same as those kids. So how does that happen in a public school system where some kids do have more resources for tutoring and for resources, and then there's some kids that don't have that? So that's a huge disadvantage for those kids that don't have that, right? So how does this, is there like a new system where schools try to balance that playing field, or is it still the same problems that I think it is?
So there are state and federal laws, commonly known as child find, where a school is mandated, where if they suspect a student has a disability, they have to reach out to the parent and recommend either interventions or a plan for special education. Usually we try interventions before we go into special education, because that's like the most restrictive we'll be with students, is to have them on an individualized education plan, where interventions we can just say, hey, take a test in another room, maybe you have too much anxiety. So we'll try smaller things first before we start doing special education testing, because it's a pretty disruptive experience. I have to grab them from class for a couple days. I have to interview parents and teachers and other, you know, people who see this student daily. So it takes a lot of time. But in addition to the state and the federal guideline of child find, it also really, really matters how often parents speak up. Mm-hmm. And it's the typical saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And a lot of people will say, oh, I don't like when teachers and parents complain about this kid. Like, da 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 da. I love it. I love a pushy parent because I know that they're fighting for their kid. Right. I love parents who know their rights. I love parents who are like, nope, my kid's struggling and you need to find the time for my kid. Mm. Because one, that's what I get paid for. Mm-hmm. Sure, sometimes it gets like, oh my gosh, I have too much to do. I don't really want to deal with this right now. But at the end of the day, I am the happiest when a parent comes up to me and is like, please help me with my kid. So in that sense, it's not so much of like what resources the parents have. It's almost like how much education they have about the process. Because a lot of parents will be like, my kid's struggling, but I don't know what to do. But a parent who knows about school psychologists, a parent who knows about special education law, will know what words to say, what phrases to write, and kind of what buttons to push to make sure that their kid gets the support that they need. And of course, money plays a factor into it too. Parents who bring lawyers into the question 9 out of 10 times will get more attention because we want to make sure that we're not, you know, messing up on that front. Although a good school district, the school district that I'm in, will always, you know, put top tier towards it because, you know, we have a reputation to uphold and we don't want any excuse for any lawyer involvement later down the line. But there definitely are barriers, kind of like the age cutoff in hockey. It's just federal law and then the knowledge that parents have.
Wow. See, I didn't know any of this.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Now I know.
Yeah, that's why it's really common. A lot of my students who are in special education, they'll have an older sibling that was also part of special education. And that introduced these parents to, oh my goodness, there's a whole new pathway of supports for my kid that I can have access to.
Right.
And of course, you get some parents that, you know, don't want the label for their kid.
Yes.
Which is completely understandable. And then you have some parents that might want extra support for a kid who doesn't necessarily need that amount of support. But those are typically, I mean, they're fairly common combined, but individually they don't happen a lot.
Right. How much of the percentage you think of the parents are the, so to say, quote unquote, embarrassed to have that label? Like, you think that is a big factor in holding them back from trying to see if their kids do need special education?
It's definitely a part of it. So one of the, I don't diagnose students, but I can say that they meet eligibilities. So one of the eligibilities that I can recommend is autism.
Okay.
And that's typically one that's hard for parents to accept because of what we kind of see it portrayed or how we used to see it portrayed in media. You know, it's an illness. It needs to be cured. There were a lot of celebrities that were kind of pushing these kinds of narratives. And so that's typically the one parents push back on. I don't want my kid to be autistic. I don't want him to have anything, quote, wrong with him. And so that's a lot of educating. One, I say this isn't a clinical diagnosis. I'm just saying that your student, your child has behaviors consistent with autism is the language I use. And then I also let them know this is just to help your student. You know, this isn't to put a label on them. Typically, IEPs only go to the IEP is what the plan is for education once you have special education. So it's this big, long legal document that like lists what the student's disability is and then all the supports that have it or that come with their plan.
Sure.
And so typically that plan only goes to the teacher. It's not like we announce it to the class unless the parent wants to do that. So we kind of explain that and usually that gets them on board a little more. But typically with the eligibility of autism and intellectual disability, which is typically what you have with students with Down syndrome or students with like severe intellectual disabilities that really impact them. They're the students who are typically in self-contained like special education classes throughout their entire education. Those are the two that parents are like, nope, I'm not going to accept it. I'm going to get a second opinion, which is fine. Mm-hmm. We're still going to support that kid the way we can.
Right, right. And another big, I don't know if it's a big change, but I recently learned that language in the psychology world is something that they're trying to not change, but maybe improve. So I heard alcoholics, they don't want to call them alcoholics anymore. Or they don't want to use that word. Right. So what is it that is changing in language? Like, is there certain words that people try to avoid now, certain terms people are trying to avoid or certain ways they try to say what they're trying to say? Is there like a easier way or like a nicer way to say? Is that what they're trying to do?
It's always adapting. Uh-huh. Some call it, you know, like the political correctness of it. Yeah. I just think of it as patient focused. Mm-hmm. So if a student comes into me, like a student came in and said, my brain flows differently. And so I'll use that language with them. I'll say, oh, well, how does your brain flow differently? Explain it. Because if they don't say, oh, I have a disability, I'm not going to be the first one to say, well, you're disabled. And even language like that, we don't usually say this disabled student or this autistic student. Mm-hmm. We say the student with autism, this student with special education. I do use the word, I use the term SPED instead of special education just because it's quicker for me to say.
Right, right.
But the second someone is like, oop, I don't like SPED, I'm like, I get it 100%. Like, I'll adjust with you. Mm-hmm. I've never been one to to be offended when someone corrects me with my language. So it adapts, but also, yeah, it's a lot more person with, student with, as opposed to saying autistic or intellectually disabled. The closest one, I would say, one that actually I was learning about in my graduate school experience, which I just graduated in May, so it's all fresh.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Is there is an eligibility that used to be called emotionally disturbed.
Oh, what?
Yes. And in my first 2 years, I was saying, oh, yeah, I have emotionally disturbed students. And then I was in a lecture, and someone said students with an emotional disability. Huh. And I was like, that makes so much more sense. Yeah. Because imagine if someone was like, oh, this kid's emotionally disturbed. Yeah. Your mind goes to like all of these things. You go to like white straitjackets, you know?
Yeah.
But a student with an emotional disability could be severe anxiety. Right. It could be, you know, some trauma that's really impacting them, and they're just, you know, 0 to 10, 0 to 100 on aggression. Right. And I wouldn't want to say that student's emotionally disturbed. I would want to say they have an emotional disability. Right. So it is kind of changing. It's adapting even now. Like ADD doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, wow. Attention deficit order, right?
So now it's just attention deficit hyperactive disorder combined.
Oh, okay.
So like I can't, ADD isn't recognized anymore. It's ADHD, either single type or combined. And that's if you just have the inattention or if you have the hyperactive part.
Wow.
I know, everything's changing. Figure. It's just our job to keep up.
My mind is like, I'm so happy right now. I don't know.
Like, and then how do you keep up with this? Like, is this just something in like the circles of like school psychologists, or is there like certain places you can get this information from?
A lot of your districts have like handbooks, like the district I'm a part of, since it's a very large district in LA, they definitely give you handbooks, bulletins that come out like on a monthly basis to keep us updated. And they always tell us, you're never going to have every answer to every question that every parent asks. My go-to answer is, let me check up on that and get back to you. Because I would never say, yeah, I know we do this, this, and this, and then have to call them back and say, oops, I was totally wrong. Mm. I was talking out of my ear, and I did not give you any correct information at all. Mm. So there's a lot of, let me get back to you, let me check in on this, let me double back, which is nice. Right. And a lot of the day-to-day work is working with students, which is nice, because they don't know how it works. So if I'm like, oh, wait, let me pause so I can see what I need to do. They don't know that I'm freaking out. They just think, oh, okay, this is when I get a break in my testing or a break in my counseling or something like that. So it's kind of nice that, like, they don't know the script. So I can go back and reread the script when I need to. And it doesn't look like I'm flubbing my lines.
Yeah, dang.
So it's not a lot of memory, thank God. Because like I said, my memory is shot. But I definitely, like, have my quick notes for when I need to refer back. There's a lot of acronyms in this job. So I have, like, my list of acronyms. So if somebody's like, did you get the AP from the ABA yet? Because we need that, you know, FIB done ASAP. And I'm like, okay, wait, what's going on? And then I go to my little checklist, and I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
Sounds like a wrap.
Do you structure your own plans, or is there, like, certain things that they have set in stone already that you can kind of go and abide and use?
Typically, this is what makes me a little sad about my current position, because in my previous job, I was able to look at a student and their history and see, okay, what's set in stone? Typically, your cognitive ability kind of solids out at around 9-11 years old. Okay. So if I see that a student has a lot of really consistent scores on something up until they're 9 through 11 years old, I'm not going to give them another test on that, because one, that's a waste of their time and my time. Two, testing is rigorous. It's not like, they're kind of like silly games. Like, one is like knowing fish names based on the way they look, and so like that sounds funny,
but
it's like 10 minutes of that. Wow. And when you're trying your hardest on that and you're not good at it, it drains you. It makes you feel like you're not good at something, you know?
Right.
So I'm never going to put a kid through something that I either already know or they don't need.
Right.
So at my previous district, I was able to do that. I was able to say, okay, this looks good. We know this is good. I don't need to test that anymore. This one looks a little shaky. Let me go ahead and test that area again. The district I'm in right now, it's not really like that. I have to give them the full battery no matter what.
Oh.
Which kind of makes me sad because I'm like testing the handwriting skills of like seniors in high school, where clearly I know that they're able to write because they're in 12th grade. They're 17, 18 years old, and they've made it this far. I obviously know they can write.
Right.
But regardless, I have to give that test.
I see. Okay.
But then when it comes to counseling, which is another area of school psychology, that's where I kind of get to be a little more free. We work towards specific goals, but like the activities or the YouTube videos or whatever the topic is that we're discussing is kind of more up to me. Or more up to the kids. Sometimes the kid will come in and they're like, I just want to talk about this thing that happened at lunch that's on my mind. And I'm like, go for it. Ball's in your court.
Wow.
And sometimes they're more into like, I want to play Uno so that way I can work on my like aggression management and stuff like that when I'm losing at the game.
So when you do counseling, do you kind of like set up your plan or you set up the room around the person? Or is it just like something standard for every person?
I do run groups. So when I run groups, I typically pick students who have a similar goal in mind. It's kind of different than like your traditional therapy. Sorry if you can see the cat.
No, it's all good.
A little different than your traditional therapy where you're probably thinking, okay, I go in and I just talk about my life and then we figure out what kind of like existential problem I'm having and then we're going to work on that over the course of like, you know, a year. Or a couple years. The counseling that I do has to fit in a school year, right?
Yeah.
And so it has to also fit into a very specific goal. So it's not like therapy as in like venting. Sometimes it turns into that because that's what a student needs. And I'm not going to be the one to say, hey, I know you're going through a lot right now, but let's stop so we can work on, you know, social skills.
Yeah.
But they'll come to me with a goal that's part of their IEP. And that goal might be choosing alternative behaviors in 4 out of 5 opportunities when presented with a negative social consequence with minimal adult support 3 times out of the month. Like they get super specific.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds very specific.
It is. And so when I meet them for counseling, I usually have, like, I love the Charlie Brown clips that are on Apple TV now. Because they're about like friendships, or the one with like Lucy and the football, it's about like trust and it's about reacting to people who like disobey your trust or kind of like misuse your trust, which is a typical kind of school experience, especially in high school. It's your first time making, you know, close relationships with new people, might be your first time getting in a relationship, might be your first time managing a job and school. So I kind of like to pick movies and shows to reflect on. And then I'm like, what would you do in that situation?
Okay.
And we kind of work through goals that way. And then I run social skills groups, which I call Lunch Bunch, which is super awesome.
That sounds
where
cool.
Kids bring their lunch and we hang out and we play Uno and Mario Party. And it teaches them how to have like back and forth conversations, stuff like that. So it's really specific counseling that's not really like therapy, but at the end of the day, the lessons they learn hopefully make everyday life easier for them.
Right.
Gotcha.
Damn. Lunch. What lunch? We said Lunch Bunch.
That's Lunch Bunch.
Damn.
That sounds fun. That sounds fun.
I wish I had a Lunch Bunch in high school. Oh my goodness.
It's super cool. And these kids just come in and like they talk to me about like what K-pop bands are in style or what new rap album came out that I need to listen to. And it's really cool. And I was talking with kind of every person I talk to now, they're like, it's kind of really strange that high school now, like the kids who like anime are cool. The kids who like that emo music or like, you know, music that's not traditionally like on Kiss FM are like really cool right now. And I'm like, I think that's super awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I love that the football team walks in with like Dragon Ball Z shirts. Like it makes me happy.
Like we live right now in a generation where, like, for example, on Twitch, the platform Twitch, there's streamers like streamers that are considered like the nerdy guys, right? Now they have like all the rappers coming on to their streams, and like they're doing like collabs with these rappers now, people that are, you know, are prominent on the cool scene compared to these guys who are at home on their freaking computers playing video games. Now they're a combined thing, just hanging out, talking on Twitch, and like now we're seeing a lot of that. And now you're even seeing it in the school districts.
I am. In fact, high schools in the district that I'm a part of, they have like magnet programs. And one of the magnet programs that's coming to one of my schools is a gaming magnet. Wow. So you're going to learn how to develop games and also how to like stream games, because that's like a viable career now.
It is.
Like it's something that we should really prep our students for.
It truly is.
Wow.
And so that it makes me so happy, because I guarantee you a lot of these kids are going to be like, I get to do video games for school and great. Like, heck yeah, I'm going to do it. So we're really adapting to what kids need, and that makes me incredibly happy. Like, I've been a school kid. I loved school. That's why I went back to grad school. Like, I would probably go get another degree if I had the time and money. That's just because I like it.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine, like, a better thing than having everybody become that. Like, everybody wanting to go to school. It makes me so happy that we're adapting.
Right. So you went to St. John's in New York, right?
I did.
So go Thunderbirds. Did I get that right?
So close.
Oh, what is it?
We were the, oh my God, what were we? We were the Thunderbirds.
So go Thunderbirds. I got that right.
Thunderbirds.
Right? I don't even know. Because we were the Johnnies, because he was Johnny Thunderbird. So I always think of myself as a Johnny.
Okay.
I see.
We used to be the Redmen, but then that became not a good word to shout.
Oh, yeah, that's not a good word to shout at all.
No.
Yeah, jeez. It just clicked for me right now. Yeah,
speaking of adapting language.
Yeah, right. Seriously. It's like the Cleveland, you know how Cleveland used to be Cleveland Indians? Now it's not. It's like Cleveland, what? Some, I don't even know.
It was the Washington.
I know the Redskins are now the Commanders.
There you go. Yeah. Dang. Yeah. So St. John's, how's that? How's studying psychology at St. John's?
It was a really cool experience because I was, so St. John's, it's a Catholic school.
Sure, yeah.
But Mass was never required. We had to take theology classes, but they were kind of more like historical tellings of the Bible, more so than like faith driven.
Sure.
So it was like real world, like the evidence that these people existed and, you know, what they testified to. But it wasn't necessarily like trying to convert us. So it was really cool to go to like a Catholic university in a super secular part of the country, right? New York City, Queens.
Yeah.
So it was like this really cool balance of like, again, like it was a Vincentian school, which was perfect for Queens because it's that he was a very charitable saint.
Mm-hmm.
And so St. John the Baptist, which is the school is known as, I think he betrayed Jesus, which fun fact, but like also he was a really charitable person. And so there was a lot of charity rooted in that. So we had to do a lot of academic service learning, which kind of introduced me to schools because I got to work with students with autism and adults with autism who would go to like day programs. So they would live in a house together and I would go and teach them like social skills, you know, hygiene, stuff that like a typical person might understand, but someone with needs might need some extra help in understanding like, well, why do I have to like put this strawberry scented stuff in my hair every day? I don't like it.
Mm.
So that was really cool. And then when I was outside of school, you know, it's New York. So yeah. I did a lot of like really fun stuff. I did a lot of stupid stuff. But the good thing was I was like 3,000 miles from home. So I couldn't get in trouble for it with my parents. And by the time they asked about it, I was like, well, I survived and it's over. So
I'm alive. I'm
good.
Here. Yeah. You're asking me about
she
it.
Was,
exactly.
From the stories.
I think after I graduated, I came home and I was like, yeah, one time I was telling my mom, I was like, one time Mark and I, we were walking and we walked the Brooklyn Bridge at like 4 a.m. after spending the entire, and she was like, why would you do that? And I was like, well, that was 2 years ago. Look, I live.
Look, I'm here right now talking to you with, exactly. a, with a degree, so I think I'm good.
Yeah, I checked all the boxes you wanted. I just checked my own, too.
I'm knocking two birds with one... Wait, one stone with two birds. Wait, I'm knocking... Two birds with one stone. There you go. I got it. I got it.
So, Julie, take me. So, I mean, you've been living in Whittier most of your life, correct?
Most of my life. I would say a good 98%.
Wow. So, how was that transition moving into a bigger city compared to Whittier?
The hardest thing I'd ever done. Really? By far. I mean, well, the hardest, like, emotional thing I'd ever done.
Okay.
Because I was never one who really liked high school. So when it was time to apply for colleges, I was like, I'm blowing this popsicle stand. I didn't apply to any schools in California.
Wow.
I applied to a couple schools in Oregon, which I wanted to go to Oregon. Oregon, I was like, because I was, you know, your little hipster grunge girl in college. So I was like, I want to go, like, I'm only happy when it rains, you know, like I was that kind of kid. And I applied to New York, to St. John's, because they reached out to me. They were like, apply, we'll waive the application fee.
Wow.
I was like, all right, cool, why not? Turns out I get in, and they offer me the most money in terms of like housing and scholarships.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, okay, what the heck, I'll accept it. And then I went, I think I visited campus once before I moved in. But on move-in day, I did not know a soul. I was the first person in my dorm, like, my suite to move in. There were other people in the dorm building, but I was the only person like in my little two sets of rooms. So I was like homesick as heck. Yeah. I did not know a soul, and I was sobbing for at least 2 weeks. And then I made some friends, but it's just, it's culture shock. These people were from all different parts of, you know, the world. I had friends from Nigeria. I had friends from Indianapolis. I had friends from Connecticut. They were all from, like, they were just nothing like me, mm-hmm. which at first was scary. I did not like it at all. I was like, my friends used to be exactly like me. I don't like being the only, like, SoCal girl.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And I remember I would call home and I'd be like, Mom, can I just transfer to Cal State Fullerton, please? Like, please let me move home. And my parents said, nope, you signed up for this. At least finish this year and then we'll talk. And I kind of dusted myself off. I made an appointment with a psychologist. I got diagnosed with depression and anxiety. I got medication for it.
Wow.
And that helped so much.
Wow.
Because I was able to like name what was going on in my head. And I had medication that was supporting me. And then I made closer relationships with my friends. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'll stay. But it was, I learned more about myself in that first year at school than I probably ever have. And throughout my entire time in New York, like, it was when I had my first, I guess, long-term relationship. And so I learned a lot about how not to be a good partner. Because, mm-hmm. like, your first relationship, you're pretty bad at it. So I learned all about, like, those kinds of things. I learned about money management. I learned about taking care of myself. I had my first apartment over there. I learned about how to deal with crazy landlords. Because my landlord was, like, certifiably crazy, like accused us of building bombs.
Wait, and tracking... what?
Yep.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Never told me this?
What?
She, God bless this woman. I thought I was going to end up on Judge Judy.
Oh my Lord.
She was like insane. And the first year, well, first of all, she asked for like 6 months rent up front. She was like, I need you to prepay me 6 months. So that way I know you're not going to, like, trash the place. And I was like, okay. I was stupid. So I was like, okay, 6 months at a time. Thank God she didn't, like, screw us over in that part. She was honest about money. But at the end of our first year lease, we signed our second year. And something happened where she would, like, accuse us. We would share a walkway. It was like a duplex. So we were at the top floor, and she and her family were at the first floor.
Oh.
And she'd be like, I know what you're doing on the stairs. And I was like, oh, what are we doing on the stairs? And she's like, no, I'm not going to tell you that I know, because then you'll know that I know, but just know that I know. And so I was like kind of head scratching, like this sounds like a riddle. So she never told us what we were allegedly doing on the stairs. But then she was like, You're getting too many packages. I think you're building a bomb. What? So I'm not going to bring in your mail anymore because I don't want my fingerprints on this bomb.
Nah, she was crazy.
She was certified. Yeah, and we were like, that's fine if you don't want to touch our mail, but like, don't accuse us of like a federal crime.
Oh my
like, that's
God.
A felony, miss. Like, what are you talking about? And then she accused us of like tracking her kid. And like GPS tracking him wherever he went. And I was like, miss, I don't even know how to use like the thermostat in here. I definitely don't know how to track your kid.
Oh,
it was bad.
What God. The hell?
She tried to evict us because we cried.
Wait, what?
She was like, you guys cry too much. We want you gone. And we were like, I mean, you can try that in court if you want, but we're staying. God. Like, we're not.
Oh my God, I can't. I would have lost my crap, dude. I would have like.
It was really tough. It got to the point where we would have to like phone record all of our interactions with her.
Wow.
Like at one point we got lawyers involved. Wow. And she like refused to speak with our attorney.
Wow.
She was like, I'm not talking to your effing attorney. You will only talk. Like she would not communicate written. Everything had to be verbal.
Wow. Wait, did you end
so
up.
So then we had to record her.
Did you end up staying there all 4 years?
That was my last 2 years.
Oh, so you stayed there for 2 years.
I stayed there for 2 years. But once she started getting like a little too crazy, I would kind of like spend more time outside of the house because I just didn't want to deal with it. But yeah, at one point our power went out and she refused to let us call an electrician because she thought we were going to like bring somebody who wasn't an electrician and they were going to like sabotage her house. And we were like, what if like they show you their license? And she was like, no. So at one point, like the police had to be called because we were like, she's not letting us use our electricity. Like, this is insane.
Wow. That's
and the cops
nuts.
Were like, this is a civil dispute. We can't do anything. And I was like,
oh, of course. Sounds like NYPD.
New York's finest, everybody.
Yeah, sounds like them, dude. Don't do nothing out there.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. But when it snowed, the house was gorgeous, I will say.
There you go. That's a positive in it.
That was worth all of the stress. Yeah, and now I have really fun stories to talk about at parties and podcasts.
There you go. We had a crazy landlord that thought I was making bombs.
I bet the difference is in weather, too. Huh? It gets hella cold out there.
Oh, yeah.
It was shell shock because everyone told me don't buy winter clothes here because it's not made the same.
Wow, really? Are you
and I was
serious?
Like, that makes sense.
Yeah. It does make
so
sense.
So I waited until I was in New York to buy all my winter coats and everything, and they held up pretty
so,
well.
So it's funny because this brand right here, actually Supreme, I bought in sweats from them, and they're a New York-based brand. Dude, they're the best, most comfortable sweats I've had in my life. Literally. Wow.
Supreme, and it was like a sporting goods store out in New York. Modell's, I think it was called. I can't even remember.
Sounds like
But even like their little like rinky dink brand, it would keep me warm.
Yeah.
Damn.
So yeah, they work with different materials out there. I mean, because look at the weather they have to deal with
it's insane.
A couple months. I
My
mean,
first
you have to have
winter.
I mean, out there you're on an island. So I mean you're just covered in just
it
wind
was
everywhere.
Insane. I had never experienced snow days. And then my first winter, we had like an entire week canceled once because there was like a bad blizzard coming in.
Wow. So you just stay at home when that happens, right?
Yeah. They would open up the dining hall and they would let us like stock up and take it back to our dorms.
Hey.
Dude, I'm
and
stacked.
So that way we wouldn't have to even like leave the dorm building.
Give
me
all
really
the chocolate
cool.
milk.
I'm stacking up on that. I'm bringing in a whole box.
It was I remember stocking up on like bread, and it was my first like snowstorm. So I was like, oh my God, what do? Do I have to charge my phone? Like, is power gonna go out? Like, what's going on? And my friends that were from that area were like, calm down, you're going to be fine. And I was like, but I don't know what I'm doing.
Us Californians are like about to just tear down the whole city because a blizzard's coming. We're like, oh, what's going to happen? It's happening. It's happening. It's like the scene in The Office where Steve Carell's going ballistic. It's like, it's happening. It's happening. It's like that scene.
Everybody's like, oh.
Everybody's like, panic. Oh. All the New Yorkers. Panic. All the New Yorkers are just staring at you like, what's wrong with that person, dude?
It's true. And then the opposite, where like you're totally mystified that it's like snowing on the street and they're like, ugh, gross traffic. So it's like total opposite. We're mystified when they're like, this is normal, and then we're freaking out when they're like, no, this is calm.
Exactly.
When I went to New York, actually, I experienced like, I mean, wasn't even like crazy weather. It poured super hard, dude. But it was only for a span of like 7 hours. And then it was completely gone.
Isn't it insane how quick the weather changes literally over there?
Wow. It was just like in the snap of a finger. Dude, it felt like I was in a damn hurricane. we're going because the rain's pushing towards us, and we're going towards the rain trying to get to a restaurant that our friend directed us the wrong way. So we're already a mile away from where we're supposed to be. And we're fighting this damn rain. We're going, and it's literally pushing me back. I'm 6'3", 200 and something pounds. And this damn wind and rain is pushing me back. I was like, I'd have never experienced anything like that.
My 5'8 ass is gonna be flying.
Oh, dude, you would have. Dude, David was flying, bro. We had a whole David because this guy was taking off.
I would have been flying, bro.
Dude, we pulled. It was one of the most embarrassing things I've had to go through. Because we were gonna go eat, right? So we pulled up to the restaurant, absolutely soaked, dude, to the point where we're dripping from our seat.
That's disgusting.
It was that bad. I felt so bad for the workers, but luckily we weren't the only ones experiencing it. Anybody that came into the restaurant was completely soaked.
Oh yeah,
that's disgusting.
And we got scammed, dude. We coming off the subway, there was a guy selling umbrellas.
Oh,
dude, $5 umbrella. This is the best umbrella. Umbrellas. Best umbrella you've ever seen in your life. Shit, did not last an hour, dog. Did not last one damn hour. That umbrella,
dude.
That's a New York experience, though. No, like, has to happen.
We got scammed like more than 3 times out there.
You stay getting scammed. You got scammed in Big Bear. You got scammed here. Yeah. You're getting scammed everywhere, bro. I think it's just you at this point.
Street smarts, bro. Nah. See, hey, come on. New York is known for that shit. Just pull up to Times Square, man.
Wait, no. Let me bring back a point. You got scammed in Big Bear. Bear. Out of all places, Big Bear.
I wasn't the only one who got scammed.
What's the common
population
denominator?
Population like 500.
It was a group, all right? And we're on the same page.
Oh, no.
It was peer pressure. I already explained the story, right?
Dude, there's a common denominator in both of those.
Nah, dude. I don't want to tap into getting scammed in New York because of what I was buying, but we'll move on.
Oh my god, that is
New York's an experience. It's something that I want him to experience because he hasn't been out there.
Yeah,
and
it's super cool.
Yeah,
I could never live there.
Yeah,
but I would 100% go visit again.
Yeah,
but the way you were talking about having like all these sorts of different types of friends from different ethnicities and different countries, that's literally what it is. It's one of the biggest melting pots in the world.
Yeah,
and even when you walk the streets, you see all different kinds of nationalities, and you can tell too. It's definitely it's very vibrant, and Times Square is always live. Like I was telling him when we were out there. The way we would kind of structure our days is like we'd wake up early, we'd go do some stuff, and then we'd come back, eat, and then we'd all take a nap, right? Yeah. And we'd take off at like 10 or 11, and Times Square is like if we never left. It's the same damn. It's just live, people everywhere, there's places that are open 24 hours. The bars out there are open till 4 a.m.
Damn, 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
People
and
wake up at that
starts
time.
At 7.
Oh, my God, dude. People wake up at 4 a.m. to go to work and then a clubbing
and then
4
it's literally the town. It's the city that never sleeps, man, because there's
literally
at that time, there's people coming out the clubs, but there's also people walking into Wall Street.
That's
you know
wild.
What I'm saying? And then the reason why, I don't know if you heard Steve Harvey talk about this before, but he's like, dude, like you got to wake up early if you're from out here because the people are already trading. People are already talking to people already making decisions about your life out in New York because they're ahead in time. Right.
Yeah.
So he's like, you got to be on it out here. Like we got to be wake up a lot early. That's why it's more standard over here than 9 to 5 just because of the time differences. And New York's a huge city. Right. So there's a lot of business that you know, gets done there and. From these
two absolutely,
cities, right?
And they're tied to a lot of other like countries' businesses. I mean, especially like New York, it's you know one of the big ports. It's one of the big like just income and like outgoing of like everything. So there's never an empty train. There's never like an empty flight. There's somebody always around you, which can be like concerning, but also like comforting depending on how you look at it.
Did you like the subway system?
I am like, you know, first like news memory was 9/11, right? So like my entire first year out there, I was like, oh my God, something's going to happen and there's going to be like some national threat and I'm going to be on the subway and I'm going to get stuck.
Crap.
So I had like severe anxiety to the point where like I had to start like full on meditating and like practicing when I was on the subway because I would just panic. Wow. But then once I kind of got over that, I was like, this is the most convenient thing of my life. Like I can get to Central Park in 40 minutes from Queens. Like this is insane.
It's definitely insane. It's the same way to travel.
Wow. Like they're never on time. But even though they're never on time, they're always like 5 minutes apart from each other. So even if like you missed the 10 o'clock, you're going to get on like the 10:07.
Oh, yeah. So they're constantly
coming.
Oh, yeah. There's like a zillion trains.
24 hours, bro. Oh, constantly moving. It's always happen. It's always like, because that's the main travel for people out there is the subway system.
Yeah. It was fun. I was out there when Uber was first up and coming.
Yeah.
And like there were still like way more taxis than Ubers. Right. And so even then, like, I was like, I trusted the subway more than I trusted Uber because I was like, I don't know who's driving me. I don't know if I can trust this. Like, but the subway, I knew there were cameras. I knew it was going to be well lit.
Yeah.
And the subway, like, there's two subway lines, the E and the F, that are like the cleanest subway lines you'll ever be on because those are the ones that tourists usually take.
Okay.
And so, like, they kind of want to upkeep this reputation. Yeah. Like, there's not a lot of graffiti or, like, scratchy-y or anything like that.
Rats.
So it always felt, no, it felt
always rats, but
relatively safe. I mean, of course, everyone has, like, they're like, oh, somebody on the subway was, like, half naked and yelling. But I only have, like, two of those and everything else was pretty calm.
I think the funnest place I've ever read a book was on a subway. Honestly,
you read a book on a subway?
Yeah,
this guy's in a movie.
I don't know why we got to try it out. So all of us were reading books on our way.
It was on your checklist of New York activities.
I swear it was. We wanted to feel.
Most people are like Statue of Liberty, you know, all of these things.
Like,
read a book on the F line.
That was that chapter took me to another world.
Yo,
bro.
Hold up. So you intentionally. You guys are like, you know what, guys, we're going to New York. You know what New Yorkers probably do? They probably read books on the train. Let's pretend like one of them. Let's read a book on
not
the train.
Intentionally.
Let's fucking do it. Let's read a book on the train, guys. Let's do it.
Do you remember what book it was?
Yeah, what book was it?
I don't recall. It was on the Apple phone. There's the books app, right? It sometimes gives you free books.
Man, I thought you meant like a real book, like a page book.
Dude, I thought you were turning.
Get out of here! Just kidding.
No, it wasn't that.
This is no longer Wes Anderson.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was gonna be a movie scene. You on the fucking train with your legs crossed, reading a fucking book page to page.
Hopefully, some New York girl falls in love with me because I look like an intellectual.
Yeah, he's an intellectual, mysterious man reading a book on the subway.
You'd be surprised. There's Instagram accounts about hot dudes on the subway.
There you go. You guys are probably trying to get on there. You guys are probably would have, dog.
I don't know why, dude. Because she just said, like, from Queens to what was it? Queens to where? It's like 40 minutes.
Central Park,
right? It's like 40 minutes. So usually, the subway rides are kind of long because you're going through all these stops.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, dude, sometimes, like, I didn't want to conversate the whole time. So I literally just popped up the book app, dude. And at that time, I was just reading constantly. So I was just... Yeah. I was like, fuck it, let me crank out a book right now.
Oh, God, yeah. And if you look busy, no one will bother you.
Exactly. Yeah, that was also a big thing, too. Like, I was also anxiety-driven, dude. And I was like, am I going to get stabbed on this freaking subway right now? Like,
it's scary.
Like, and it's interesting, bro. It's like the Santa Monica Pier, but moving. Because you get, like, free shows, literally.
Yep.
You get, like, these buskers and, like, you get people performing for you. You get a free show on your way to wherever you're going sometimes. It's an interesting, interesting way of travel for sure. Dude,
did you know all of the buskers have to audition and be approved?
Wait, what?
Get out of here.
No way.
Are you
at
serious?
Least that's how, I don't know if it's changed maybe since COVID or something. But yeah, all of the buskers who are like in the subway systems, like playing underground and stuff, and some that are like in the public parks and stuff, they have to audition and then be approved.
Yo, New York is for the vibes.
And who hosts the auditions? The city?
I would imagine so. I don't know that.
It's kind of like
New York's Got Talent. What the hell is
this? I watch a YouTuber that does it.
Oh,
and it's kind of, there is a board for it, and
okay,
you have to
sense.
Get like a license. Like you have to, you have to be approved and everything.
Damn. So I'm assuming they're making great money then, right?
No, but they make okay. They make money.
Because I'm like, damn, how restrict? I guess it was probably it's a popular thing. I'm assuming so. Like,
I think, yeah, because they don't want too many performers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think they probably want to make sure that, like, performers are, like, somewhat legitimate and not just, like, annoying, quote, like, passengers and stuff.
Yeah.
So you get a license and, like, let's say, like, a metro officer, like, hey, you have your license on you? He has the right to, like...
Yeah, they can check.
And if you don't, you get fined or what?
Well, I would imagine they could just kick you out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's how they get pianos down there and everything.
That makes total sense.
Wow.
And that's why I guess these shows like Jimmy Kimmel are able to...
Get
to
them on.
To do those busker shows with the celebrities. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, so it's not as spontaneous as it looks.
I'm assuming that's kind of the same thing in London, right? With the bullet train? I'm only assuming,
probably.
Right?
I would imagine so. Because I can just imagine like... a bunch of random like guitarists and singers and like puppeteers.
I saw a busker video and it was James Arthur. He was acting, but he was a dead giveaway. Like his voice, just like people already knew it was who it was. And but he was in the middle of a train station, so I don't know if I'm just assuming, right? This is kind of the same way that they do it.
Yeah, I'm sure if like it's a celebrity skit, they probably like let the police department know so that way they can like crowd control as soon as they figure it out. Yeah. But. Yeah, even your typical one has to get, like, pre-approved.
Jeez. Have you ever had to deal with police over there?
So when they were called to my apartment, they did the whole, like, I can't see your eyes thing to see if, like, my eyes were dilated. Because my landlord told them that we were growing weed in the house, which we weren't.
Jeez.
She really just threw everything and waited to see what would stick. But then in the city... I would always ask for directions because even though, I don't know if you guys know like John Mulaney's comedy, but he's like, it's a grid system, motherfucker. Like, even though it's like straight lines are going across, like I would still get lost because I'm like, which way's east? Which way's west? I don't know what's going on. So I would ask them for directions and they were always really helpful because there's like a phrase that like New Yorkers are kind but not nice. And people from LA are nice but not kind. And I think that holds true.
Yo.
Say that again.
So they say people from California are nice but not kind. So like if your car breaks down, they'll be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But they won't help you.
Okay.
And New Yorkers are not nice but they're kind. So they'll help you but they'll be like, fuck, now I'm late for work because I got to help this guy. But like either way, they'll help you.
Love
so New
that.
Yorkers are very much like that. Like anytime I got lost, I would like... walk up to some random person, I'd be like, which way is this street? And they'd be like, it's that way. But they would still tell me.
Right.
I saw this video online of this this mother. She had her baby strapped onto her chest. And I don't know why she decided. I guess she was doing like an experiment. But she decided to build her stroller on the sidewalk. So like she recorded the whole process. But obviously with the baby on her, like, she was trying to show how kind New Yorkers are. So like there was just constant people just stopping by and helping her put something together. And then this guy was grabbing this and then this guy was grabbing that. And then it was just a bunch of collective people just helping her out. And
because everyone in New York is struggling.
Right.
Yeah, so we all collectively help each other.
They get it. Yeah. Dang. New York seems like an interesting place to be at. I like I said, I'll go, but I think I'm waiting for the right time. And I don't know if there's going to be right time. I promised myself I'll go to New York for work. Like, that's, like, my main goal. That's why I haven't gone for vacation. But, yeah, I definitely want to experience what you guys have been talking about. I'm, like, over here listening to it. I feel like I'm in New York in my mind right now. I'm like, damn, that sounds crazy.
It's super cool. Definitely do the touristy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But also do kind of, like, the local stuff. Like, definitely. Going to, like, a coffee shop is, like, cool. But also, like, once you've been to one coffee shop, you've kind of been to them all. So, like, don't feel like you have to go to one, like, in Greenwich and then one in the East Village and then one over here. Like, they're all pretty much the same overpriced, like, coffee.
$9
but
lattes.
But definitely for the experience, you got to do it.
Yeah, for the vibes, for the New York Cafe vibes.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to ask you a few terms in psychology that I've been trying to understand. And maybe you can help me understand them better. Okay, so I have...
I'll do my best.
Okay, so I have three ones that I'm really, like, trying to get myself to learn. So the first one is confirmation bias. So
confirmation.
Yeah.
This is like a test.
Yeah, so confirmation bias. So this is how I understand it. And you can tell me if I'm completely wrong and I'm going to be completely okay with that. So what I think confirmation bias is, pretend I have a theory. Pretend I'll use... I don't want to go back to this college because they're not playing me. And... Mm-hmm. everything in my mind will say, yeah, they're not playing you because the coach doesn't like you. Oh, they're not playing you not because you're not good enough. I'm making all these excuses and reasons that is biased to myself for me to believe that theory I have. But in reality, it's just that I'm not good enough. So is that what confirmation bias is?
That's like part of it. You have like a huge part of it.
Okay.
The other part that you're missing is pretty much that there is evidence towards like the opposite. You're just choosing to ignore it.
So you're
biased towards the information that's confirming your beliefs.
Got it. Because I believe that the coach doesn't like me.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is a reason why he doesn't like me. Is that what it is?
Kind of. Or like maybe the coach did play you, but you were like, nah, he only played me because that guy was injured. He only called me up because he knew it was my birthday that weekend, or he knew my family was in the audience, or like whatever it is. Like you're kind of picking and choosing the information that confirms your bias.
Okay, there we go. Now I have a complete understanding of confirmation bias. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I've always thought about it, because all my life I have these theories and I'm like, and I barely learn about confirmation bias. I'm like, holy crap, I've been doing that all my life. I just never knew what it was.
It's super common. I do it all the time. I do it with like restaurants, like, oh, that place was awful. Even though one time they gave me like a really good even then, like the coffee was bad. Like, you do it all the time. It's a big like part that contributes to like prejudices or like things like that, because you're like, every person I knew who had red hair, you know, and then you're ignoring all the nice people with red hair, or you know, stuff like that.
Right. So how can a person like me that always does that kind of like change where it doesn't affect my life? I feel like sometimes I make decisions just based off my confirmation bias, and I don't want that to ultimately affect my life in the long run. So how can I get myself to be real and not have confirmation bias?
I always tell like my students or like anybody I'm working with, like I say behavior or like circumstances never happen in a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like the coach didn't play you because the coach didn't play you. Mm-hmm. The coach maybe didn't play you because he knew you were injured, or maybe he knew that the other guy had a better time at practice. Like, there were other things going on that influenced that decision. It wasn't just like one little thing that contributed to like, I'm not putting you in the game. Mm-hmm. So like that kind of stuff, that there's a million other things that have been going on. Maybe you looked sick on the bench. Maybe, you know, like maybe there were all these other things, kind of like that Lost in Translation kind of bit. Like, he had other things going on. You had other things going on. The player that got put in had other things going on. And all of that contributed to that one thing. So kind of like in a don't take it personal kind of a way.
Sure, yeah.
But then also like, it's just a drop in the bucket kind of a deal. Like, that's just one experience you had. Like, every experience, of course, they add up to like a theory or a bias.
Right.
But when you break it down, it's just like these little things that happened, and you kind of have to see like other little things are going to happen. They're going to add to my experiences. Am I going to make them as big of a deal as I made these earlier things? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to just kind of see them as like passing moments that add up to this whole big experience? Mm-hmm. That's how I kind of try to deal with it. Like,
okay,
I give people the benefit of the doubt all the time. To the point where people tell me I'm way too nice. But I'd rather be way too nice than like somebody who's really like apathetic.
Right.
So I do give people a lot of chances because I want people to give me a lot of chances.
Sure, yeah.
And then also like, you know, if I have a bad day, it was a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's going to be a bad week. It might mean that. But if I'm more positive, kind of like, it's not super psychological, but kind of, what is it? Like, you attract what you put out.
Right.
If I'm thinking positively, I'm going to see more positive stuff.
Right.
So I kind of think of it that way. So like, kind of try to think like, I'm going to have more positive experiences. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that will like make you realize more positive interactions with this college or this coach or this type of person.
Gotcha.
And stuff like that.
Okay. All right, yeah, that wow. Definitely, yeah, see?
That took me on a journey.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the next one I have, I don't know this completely, but I keep hearing it a lot, and it's called attribution error. What's that?
That is a good question. I am not 100% familiar with that one.
Okay, all right.
Attribution error.
Yeah, I learned about it like 2 weeks ago, maybe. And I heard it from a person that is a special, he specializes in false convictions. And he talks about it. I knew what it meant when I was listening to it. Now I completely don't know. So we can just move on from attribution error. I'll get on the next episode we do in the future. I'll try to bring it up again and try to talk about it.
Yeah, I would imagine it's probably like making kind of like confirmation bias in a way. Probably like making assumptions based on someone's attributes.
Maybe, that sounds a lot like that.
Yeah. I've heard about it before in regards to like criminal cases, where like you're thinking somebody would do something based on either a socioeconomic thing about them or based on a racial thing about them. So you would be like, of course that person would do that because of this, because they come from this kind of house, when those two things might not actually have anything to do with each other, you know?
okay now it's starting to make sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, all right, well, we can move on from that, because I wanted to, I'll research for it before I bring it up again. Yeah. Okay, the next one is the most popular one that everyone probably freaking knows now. Imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome.
Everybody probably knows this already. Okay, so just to give you a little bit of background of what I do. So I'm an actor, and I've never acted in my life. Like, this is like the first 3 years I've been in it, and I've never
Congratulations. Thank you.
I've never done anything in my life that's this. So before then, I was a basketball player. So I knew my identity in basketball because I knew how good I was. Like, not trying to, you know, have a big head, but I just knew how.
No, toot your own horn. Yeah, there you go. Celebrate your accomplishment.
thank you. But yeah, I had stats to back up how good I was. I had evidence to show that I was good. I was scoring. I was getting talked to by people to say like, oh, you should play college, you should do this. I was able to reach levels that I thought I would never get to. And there's actual evidence that I am good. But in acting, if you audition for something and don't get it, that doesn't mean you're not good, though. It just means maybe somebody else just had a better look, or maybe somebody just knew somebody else that got him that role. It's never about how you are, how you think, how good you are. It's more of just sometimes it's opportunity. So for me, imposter syndrome is that if I audition for certain things or if I'm on set, like recently I was on a big set, I was like, do I really fucking belong here? But then that is the evidence that I did have in basketball, where I did have the stats. I am on a set. So, and maybe I am good enough, but I still struggle with it because I'm not working consistently. It's always 6 months on and then like another 6 months off, or 4 months on and like 6 months off. So for me, it's like every time I work, or even every time I audition, I'm like, fuck, I'm not getting anything. Am I good enough? Like, do I belong here? How do you like tell someone to like not have those thoughts? Like, how do you not have imposter syndrome? Is all just like, is it really just like positive thoughts like you said earlier, or is there more to it?
It's similar. Imposter syndrome is something that is, I'm glad that there's like a name for it, because it's something that a lot of people experience. Like, a lot of people say in my field, like, you're gonna have imposter syndrome for like your first 3 to 5 years. You're not gonna feel like you're competent, and you're not gonna feel like you can answer every question for like 3 to 5 years. So it's not just in acting, it's not just in sports, it's not just like, it's everybody, it's every career, it's every education program, it's every degree, it's every undergrad experience. And one thing that I tell myself and I tell other people that like are kind of feeling imposter syndrome is, but you made it. Your merits got you to where you are. Your talents got you to that movie set. They would not have picked you if they didn't think that you were ready for it, if they didn't think that you didn't have the skills for it. So it's really just acknowledging your skills and acknowledging that, okay, I did my 3 years of school and I got hired here. Okay, I auditioned and I'm on set. They called my name for this day. It's really just acknowledging everything that got you to where you are.
Wow. I don't know why that's so mind-blowing to me. Like, that's insane. That made me feel better right away. That's crazy. I guess I'm just really hard on myself. I guess imposter syndrome is just being really hard on yourself, I guess. Right? Is that a part of that? Like, where it's like, you're just really hard on yourself. You don't appreciate it.
Yeah, you're so hard on yourself that you don't even think you're good enough. And so, I mean, yeah, reflecting back on the merits and reflecting back on the stuff that you went through and you got selected. Like, I was telling him, because we've talked about this before. We're just going through life things, right? And I mean, I brought up Florida, dude. How many people get elected for that?
Oh, wait. The thing I did in Florida? Yeah. Only not a lot.
So it's like he's doing things that, like, you know, I mean, only a select few are able to do, right? So, I mean, it's definitely all about the reflection for sure.
Yeah. I definitely. Tough. Yeah, for some reason. So I'm trying to be more aware of what is it that's holding me back from being sad. Not satisfied, content. Like, I'm trying to be in a place where I'm content, but not satisfied to the point where I become stagnant, right? Like, I want to pursue more, but then I don't want to feel like I don't have enough because I do have enough, right? So it's like, for me, it's like a constant battle of like, okay, I do have what I have, but then I want more.
Yeah.
But then sometimes that wanting more makes me forget what I have. So it's like a constant, like, you know, push and pull. But then it's like how... I don't know. I mean, shit, like, some days I feel like crap and some days I feel good. It's like, what is going on? Is that like just a constant thing that's just going to happen throughout my life? Or am I just at a point in my life where I'm in a quarter life crisis and I think I want more, but then I don't? And what is that?
I think it's okay to strive for more. You know, that's like a big part of the world we're in, because it's not even always just wanting more for yourself. It's wanting more for your family. It's wanting more for your friends. You know, like, everything we get, we're eventually able to, like, share that with people. Even if it's, like, our salary's getting better, mm-hmm. we usually spend our money on friends and family and experiences that we share. So mm-hmm. wanting more isn't necessarily, like, a bad thing in and of itself. But it's also good to know that what you already have is going to take you to get more.
Oh, my God.
You know, the skills that you have, the resources you have, those are the steps to take you further.
Dude.
Yo.
She is spitting.
What you already have is what is going to take you to what you want. Is that what you said right now? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So, oh, like, don't think of, like, wanting more as being disrespectful or ungrateful to what you have. It's utilizing it.
Wow.
It's putting it towards a greater purpose.
Wow. Oh, my God. I'm, like, trying to process everything right now. I'm going to be writing in my journal right after this episode. Oh, my God. Okay, so.
Yeah.
All right, so I was listening to a psychologist on a podcast not too long ago, and she was talking mm-hmm. about how sometimes people are not afraid. Yeah, you could say afraid, or afraid to go to therapy because they think it's just going to be a performance for them. Like, they're rehearsing what they're saying. They're rehearsing mm-hmm. things that they want to say, and they're trying to impress the psychologist to show, like, oh, I'm, you know, aware of my feelings. I know what I feel, and I'm just trying to better myself. But truly, they're the complete opposite. So when you have kids come in and talk to you, do you think mm-hmm. for them it's less of a performance and just really what they're feeling? Because at that age, I feel like sometimes you're still pretty real with yourself. You're not trying to put on a performance because you really do feel a certain way.
So. Oh, yeah. That's really why I love, love, love that I work with students. Like, middle schoolers are the perfect age because mm-hmm. they're kind of, like, old enough to, like, have these big thoughts about the world and identity and all of these things. But they're young enough to have no filter. Mm. So they will just say. Mm-hmm. They will just speak mm-hmm. from the heart, like, off the top of their head, like, they just speak. Like, high school, you've started to become a little more careful about what you say or, like, the things that you're disclosing. But a lot of the time, students will come in and they are incredibly honest. One, because sometimes it's the first time they're experiencing therapy or counseling. And so they're like, I think I'm just supposed to say everything. And you are. You are just supposed to say everything. Yeah. So it works. Yeah. And then you do get kids that are, like, at first kind of, like, cautious about what they're saying. I don't really want to let you in. You're still, like, an adult. I don't know if I can trust you. I don't know if you're going to tell my parents and stuff like that, which legally I can't.
Mm-hmm.
But usually once they spent time with me or once I explain, like, unless there's, like, a safety risk happening here, I'm not even allowed to tell, like, my coworkers or, like, my parents about what we discuss. Like, I could lose my certification. And then they usually start to open up. Right. And that's kind of what happens with adults in therapy, too. Like, you might start off, like, even when I first started therapy, I was like, I'm going to act like I only have one problem and everything else I have together. And my only problem is that I'm homesick. That's all I have going on is I'm just homesick. Everything else is swell. And then as I spent more time with my therapist, I was like, oh my gosh, everything else is this way too.
Right.
So you kind of, as you get comfortable, just disclose more.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. So pretend I'm going through something and I'm trying to confide with one of my friends. I'm telling them it's only one thing that's bothering me. One thing. But all mm-hmm. I know deep down, there's so many goddamn more things mm-hmm. that I'm going through that's making me feel this way. But this is one of the biggest factors. So I'm just saying, or like, this is the one I'm safe to say, like, this is what I'm comfortable to say, so I'm gonna say this instead of mm-hmm. everything else going on. But when you get like 45 minutes deep into like a discussion, you start opening up, you're like, oh fuck, like, honestly, dude,
exactly. And that's so great. I really love when like we're talking about one thing and then it like divulges into another thing, because I'm like, this is related somehow, and I love it. Like, it just mm-hmm. I'm a talker, and I love when other people are talkers, so it's just, it's therapy. Counseling is fun for me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So okay, so there's, you know how when you have students come in and pretend it's very heavy and you really feel it, how do you not bring that outside of work? Like, is there like a certain boundary do you have, or is there certain exercises that you do before you get home to get rid of those feelings?
I do bring it home. And I think probably a lot of other school psychs do, a lot of other counselors do, a lot of other social workers do. Because it's hard. It's not like you can leave it at the door.
Sure.
School psychologists deal with like suicide assessments. We deal with threat assessments. We deal with a lot. And when there's community tragedies that involve our students, like if there's gang violence that our students are involved in, and there might be a death or a serious injury involved in that, you know, we have to counsel those students. And so this year we had a very serious community trauma event, mm-hmm. and it involved a student. So we had to counsel. And when I was at work and I was working with the students, I was able to hold it together. But the second I got in my car, I let myself cry. And I let myself like ugly cry mm-hmm. and just feel it all. Because at the end of the day, we're still human.
Right.
And that stuff's hard. And if I were to deny my feelings, that would be a really bad role model for my kids. Mm. So while I'm in front of them, of course I'm going to hold it together. Like, I mean, I teared up with them, so, because, like, it's just naturally what would happen. Sure. But I, once I was in, like, a safe space, I allowed myself to just sob and, like, cry, like, hurt cry. Mm-hmm. And it's helpful because it lets it out. It reminds me that I'm good at this job, but I'm also a real person. And then I can go in the next day and still support my students. But I cry in my car. I cry when I get home. And then to disconnect, it's one of my bad habits, but I don't call it a guilty pleasure because I don't feel guilty about it.
Sure.
I watch a ton of reality TV. And so I'll watch the Kardashians. Yeah. I'll watch Jersey Shore. I was watching Jersey Shore before I jumped on here.
Heck yeah.
I have to do stuff where like I'm in another world and I don't really have to think really hard.
Yeah, I feel
with
that.
Reality TV, I don't have to think really hard about these things.
Because they're not thinking really hard.
And so that really helps.
Yo, that
yeah,
is so
at
good.
Work I'm thinking yeah. really, really hard.
Reality TV.
I can't go home and watch like murder mysteries yeah. too much because I'm like, I have to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
But oh, if I'm watching like Kim Kardashian get ready for the Met, I don't have to all think good. About anything.
Wait, quick question.
So it helps.
Have you seen Too Hot to Handle on Netflix?
I have. I saw the first season. I saw the first season right when the pandemic hit.
Okay, so you haven't seen anything beyond season one?
No, but I remember thinking that it was one of like the stupidest setups for a show, and then as I watched more, I was like, this is a really interesting, like, probably scripted, but interesting social experiment of like, these people's only qualifications were like they were hot
yeah.
and they all wanted to bang.
Yeah.
And like that, they were just like, lock him in a house. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, lock him in a house
what
and they can't have sex. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't even like kiss each other. Yeah. And I'm like,
It's insane.
I don't know anybody who is going to be that psychologically disturbed by not being able to, like, make out with someone for, like, what? It was, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah, three weeks. You know what's funny? A college teammate of mine is on season 4 right now.
No way!
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because I watched the first 6 episodes that dropped yesterday. And I know, I personally know him. Like, I've lived with him for about a year. And the way he is on the show is exactly how he is in real life. So I'm like, what the heck? Yeah, it's really, I was like, dude, this guy's actually, this is how he is in real life. And I'm like, dude, this is insane that I'm seeing someone I personally know in one of these shows.
It's like, now I'm going to have to watch season 4.
Yeah, you got to watch it. And then one of these days, we're going to bring him into the podcast. I'm just going to interview him. Like, so what's up, man? What really happened in that house, huh?
I would that episode, I'm going to stream the second it gets on. Because I'm always, I love knowing, like, how much of it is scripted and how much of it is like, oh, no, I was just in the mood to exaggerate something that they, like.
You know what I watched an episode of recently? It was a really old reality TV show. It's called My Big Fat Fiancé.
God damn.
Oh my God.
Is that real?
No, it was a real show. So the premise of the show was, so I mean, I don't know exactly how much real of it was, but it was pretty much it was a girl who had to present like this boyfriend that she just met to her family, but it's all scripted. Like the actor is a boyfriend. I mean, the boyfriend's an actor. So he's pretty much just trying to make her life a living hell, cuz he's trying to deter her from winning money. So she wins $500,000 if she convinces her family that he's the perfect fit. But the whole time he's being a fucking nuisance, dude. Like, really bad. Like, he, and then they also bring an acting family so that they introduce families, right? So they bring a whole family, that, a bunch of actors. So they have a sister who talks about death constantly. They have the dad who's like a swinger almost. He's always talking about sex. Like, dude, the actor boyfriend goes, like, literally tells the dad, like, hey, just letting you know, we haven't had sex yet, but, you know, we're thinking about it, but just know that we haven't had it yet. So they're pretty much just, oh, it's just like Impractical Jokers, but like in this setting
with money, with extra money involved.
Yeah, and pretty much like when I was watching the episode, the girl, like her one of her brothers was like, yeah, I can't do this, like don't do it. Like her mom's like, no, don't do that, no, because like they were talking about the host of the show was like, okay, you have to let them know that you're gonna get married in 3 days, and they all know that they're engaged, but they just brought them over there to meet, and now they're gonna explain to them that they're getting married in 3 days. So like, it's pretty much just to, they do everything they can so for her not to win $500,000.
Wow.
So,
yeah. So like, the brother didn't want to, and she's like, please, bro, like, I won't be able to go through this if you're not there. And then the mom's like, come on, you have to do it, this and this and this. And then the whole time behind your mind, you're like, this bitch trying to win the money.
Wow.
Dude, it's such a great show. Like, I watched it on Twitch. Some guy was reacting to it.
Yeah. I like when people react to
it. I watched it for free. Like, I didn't have to go and find it. Like, he was just watching the show. He put it on for me. Like, have you seen the show Alone? Have you heard of Alone?
I've seen like an episode here or there.
I literally watched the whole season because this guy was reacting to it.
Damn, what the heck? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, literally, like, they allow you to react to certain things that, I mean, are not copyright.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I off that one episode, I was hooked, though. I definitely want to find that show, see if it's still streaming somewhere. Or
yeah.
That's that early 2000s reality
it
TV.
It literally gives you that
where, like,
vibe.
They had no filter and like no conscience.
It gives you that whole vibe because they're even interviewing them, right, throughout the episode. So like the boyfriend's like, oh, like this is where the desperate act comes in. And then he like legit, he's like, I'm having an anxiety attack. Like I need air. I need to get out of the car now. I need to get out of the car. And then he's like, dude, I'm honestly just trying to get her to hug me because I'm trying to get her to tell her that she loves me. Like, and he's just being a menace. It's a really good show.
Oh my God.
I recommend it.
Okay, wait, hold up. So this is the most very serious question
I
have.
Oh my God.
Right now. Very serious question for Julie. So who do you think wrote the letter? Who do you think wrote the letter?
Wrote what letter? Wait, the note, you mean?
Yeah, the note. Damn it, it's the note, not the letter. Fuck, I fucked that whole bit up. Damn it.
Well, yeah, I'm lost.
I meant
redo. Well, we know that Sammy and Snooki. No. We know that Jenny and Snooki wrote it, yeah. And Angelina was the one who provided the information. I think the bigger question is, were they right or wrong? I think they were right to write this letter.
Yeah,
I think they were
girl right. code.
I mean, I would want to know if like my exactly. I would want to know if like my like new boyfriend, like recently back together boyfriend, was like cheating on me. Like
Dude, that note.
I don't know why it was such a controversy to the girl. Like seriously. Clearly, she just wanted to ignore all the bad behavior.
Yeah, she wanted to ignore all the red flags.
Which is fine. Yeah, like if you want to ignore red flags, be my guest. But then don't also complain about the red flags. Yeah, like,
Ron, stop.
You gotta choose your bed.
Yeah, the way that they wrote it, one of the phrases said, Ron was making out with two grenades, right?
Yeah, with multiple ugly fat women. I think they said again, early 2000s where we just said it.
God. Dude, that show is a trip. I don't know how many times I've watched it. I've watched it a lot of times. It's so entertaining for me. Like,
it's just good trashy TV.
It's a household TV
show. You can't beat
for
it.
Sure.
I watched the first season of the Family Vacation one, the newest one, the first season. I don't know why I was still intrigued. I was
the
like,
one they go to Italy?
No, the one the Family Vacation.
Oh,
one.
Recently?
Yeah, the one recently. Okay.
Like, mm-hmm. They're like all married with kids now.
Yeah. They're all adults.
Mike just got out of jail.
Yeah.
Tax evasion.
Oh my God.
Jesus. That he really show. Did turn his life around, though. For, at least from what it appears.
Oh, yeah.
From what it looks like, he's got his life together.
So family now.
Good
for
him. Married
good
man.
For him. He Although he's like always in scandals on the show. I guess he's still kind of a pot stirrer.
You know, at least.
He's just that guy, though. He's always been that guy.
He's just that menace. He probably went to therapy. That's why he got his life turnaround.
Oh yeah, he's like always using his phrases, his mindfulness. He is tuned in.
Yeah, he's tuned in. He knows what he's doing. Oh my God! But damn, can you guys believe it's already been what, an hour and a half already? Has it been? I think it is.
Right? I know.
Yeah. Well, damn, that's insanity. But yeah, so Julie, I don't want to get more of your time. It's already an hour and a half. So we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for coming.
Truly.
That was so much fun. Like, I'm so happy. Like I said in the beginning, I'm like, I am so fascinated with psychology and any type of psychologist. It's all I listen to. It's like, I should be a psychologist. Maybe in like a past life I was. But hopefully.
There's still time.
Yeah, there's still time. I'm still young. Maybe I do become one. But how do you call this? Yeah, we would honestly imagine if you became like a resident therapist on the podcast and we just talked.
I would love anything you guys need. I loved this. Oh, I love talking about my job. I love talking about, I really love spreading information about especially school psychology. So anything you guys need, this was a blast.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, we're definitely going to, I'm going to let him, I'm like, hey, Marcos, make sure Julie remembers that she's going to be our resident psychologist on the new podcast forever.
She's hired. She's on.
She's hired. She's going to be
there. Just pencil me in.
She's in.
She's in the books. Well, Julie, thank you so much. And is there anywhere, like, pretend somebody wants to contact you or, like, wants to follow you on Instagram or social media. Where can they find you?
So I have technically two Instagrams. My personal is just Julie Cornejo. And then I do have one for work where I do talk about school psychology a lot.
I didn't know about this.
Yes.
What the heck? Okay, what is it?
We'll
it is called 2 Degrees for IEPs.
I am following right
and
now.
I talk about, I post memes about my job. And I also post a lot of like educational information about things to know about school psychology. I post a lot of motivational content. Hopefully people find it motivational.
Yeah.
And then I do fun stuff. I post the clothes I wear to work. I post what I do in a day and stuff like that.
God,
so
what? I didn't know about what
you
tell
so
me about
if
that.
Anybody wants to learn more, 2 Degrees for IEPs on Instagram.
Wait, 2 Degrees like number two, or is it 2 spelled out?
It's all spelled out. So TWODEGREES FORIEPS.
Got it. I found it. Wow.
And that's me.
Yep, I'm following. I just followed right now. So yeah, you guys should all follow too. That was so much fun, and I'm definite that you're coming back. And then next time, hopefully, we'll be in person. It'll be a lot more fun. We'll have coffee.
Yes.
We'll have do all that. Pretend like we're in New York reading a subway. I mean, we're in a subway in New York reading. I said that completely backwards.
I'll bring my Kindle.
Yeah, bring make sure your iPhone books is ready to go, and we'll pretend like we're in a subway.
Yeah, and we might even have a little surprise for you guys on the next episode as well. So
look out
for that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. It was a blast. Peace.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, Julie.
Bye.